Hi, I'm J.W. Stewart, a veteran broadcaster and journalist with nearly 30 years' experience. I've worked at ESPN and NBC, and now I teach at the University of New Haven.
And I'm Cheyenne Zenger, Director of Athletics at the University of New Haven. Prior to that, Director of Athletics at the University of Kansas and Illinois State University. The first 15 years of my career, however, was a college football coach and an athletic administrator. This is the Dr. Z and J.Dub podcast.
Hi again, everybody, and welcome back to the Dr. Z and J-Dub podcast brought to you by our presenting sponsor, the Pink Clover Foundation. As always, thank you very much for joining us across all of our social media channels. And of course, our podcast is available on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. Today on the show, our guests are Jim Rooney and Jeremy Duru. The Rooney family has owned the Pittsburgh Steelers since the team's inception back in 1933. Jim's father, Dan, is in the Hall of Fame. His grandfather's in the Hall of Fame. And his father is the namesake of the Rooney Rule in the NFL, which requires all teams to interview minority candidates for positions like head coach, offensive defensive coordinator, general manager, team president, and other front office personnel positions. Jeremy Duru is a sports law expert, law professor, and advocate for diversity and inclusion. Jim and Jeremy often speak together, and we're grateful for their time today. They'll be out in a few minutes. They're in the back room right now, and then they'll join us in just a few. But I wanted to get Dr. Z's take on the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 55 was yesterday. I think I know what your reaction is, your opinion is, but I'm still going to ask it, Z. What is your opinion and your reaction to what we saw yesterday in Super Bowl 55 between your Kansas City Chiefs and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
So I didn't see that pitch coming a mile away, huh?
Yeah.
You know, it probably will shock you. This is where, as you well know, I really hate to even designate myself as a fan in any way, because all I do is turn on the TV or go to a game. You know, I love the game. To me, it's second only to religion, and it almost is religion to me. That's how I was brought up. It's in every fiber of my being. And with that, I shifted gears somewhere in that game to really appreciating what was going on in front of us. And we could spend 2 hours on this, J-Dub. Everything from the Chiefs being in out two tackles to their secondary with their repeated penalties, with whether that's their style of play, that being handsier. I don't know. I've watched most of their games, but I don't really recall that. Maybe a little bit to the whole Tom Brady story. You know, you can't be someone interested in football without just admiring what that man's accomplished. And the conversations I've had this morning, and I've probably had too many, it's gotten in the way of work, quite frankly. Just the admiration that I have for the preparation he puts into each game, each season, and not just the reams of notebooks that people say he has and takes, and his 5 a.m. meetings on Monday, you know, at the age of 43, to, you know, what he does to care for his body and his mind. You know, he doesn't just show up and win. A lot of time, effort, and energy goes into this, and I think I would sum all this up by saying back to you, J-Dub, it's somewhat, not only do I admire what he does, and again, I've never gotten an autograph in my life, so it's not hero worship. It's a little bit intimidating and inspiring to watch what he does and then apply that to your own life. So how's that for a takeaway from the game? That's really my biggest takeaway.
As usual, Z, that's a great big picture takeaway by you. It's not just the game, it's the bigger impact. And I would agree with you. We've heard a lot of experts and non-experts weigh in on Tom Brady the last 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl. What is it that sets him apart? What is it that gives him now 7 rings? You could say talent to a degree, certainly, although he was not, you know, he was number 199 pick, you know, in the draft. He wasn't, you know, a first-round pick by any stretch. So he had talent, but not talent like some other guys. So he's worked his way into what he's got, you know, to what he's achieved. But I would agree with you, Z. I would think that preparation is probably the one big key that sets him apart. And here's a probably even a scarier thought for the rest of the NFL, right? Here's the guy at 43. He said he wanted to play to 45. See, he might never retire the way he's going right now. I mean, why would you?
That's right. And there again, that's, you know, I might be a decade older than him, but he inspires me to then finish strong, even stronger. You know, looked in the mirror and thought, well, why am I not having meetings at 5 a.m.? I don't mean to scare John and Rob and some others who are in the back room here, but you know what? I like to think I have a strong work ethic and whatnot, but we can all be a little better. We can all be a little more efficient, a little more organized. And, you know, having been brought up by Bill Snyder at Kansas State, this haunts me every day. And then to hear that Tom Brady does that just makes you kind of judge yourself a little more harshly. And some psychologists would have a field day with this, but that I just can't shake it today. That's my takeaway. Now I could also get into the, and the only negative thing you'll hear me say about the Chiefs, and it's not my place to judge, but it looks like, it seems to me that that game started at halftime of their previous game, game 12 against the Buccaneers, and some of the celebrating. I'm old school when it comes to that. If you're going to celebrate, you better be able to back it up all the way. So, it's hard to beat a team twice, and especially if you maybe rubbed it in their face the first time.
Yeah, a little bit of incentive the second time around. And even the first time around, even though Kansas City got out to the big lead back in week 12, they only won by 3 points.
Well, that's my point. That the last two quarters of that game plus these were, you know, and yet, hey, I'm still a huge Mahomes fan. Love Andy Reid. Think he's one of the best coaches there is. And on a, you know, so.
Last question here, Z, before we bring out our guests, Jim and Jeremy. A bold prediction by our associate AD, John Mays, and the executive producer of our podcast. He said, he claims, this is a bold prediction, that Patrick Mahomes is not going to make another Super Bowl. What's your reaction to that?
I think he did that for my benefit. You know, I'll have to take the alternate. Well, for the next 10 years, we'll be betting each other. You know, of course, we can't do that in our jobs, but, you know, maybe I'll buy him a Coke or something, you know.
Yeah.
I just, it's fascinating to watch him play. I think he turns most football games into his own version of PE class or recess, you know, and we even saw that yesterday, you know, with a broken down O-line, some of the things he still did, balls that were dropped, him throwing sidearm and this and that. And let's talk about one more thing about preparation. Those arm angles he uses aren't on accident. I have friends at Texas Tech, friends with the Chiefs. That's something he practices. He doesn't just go out there and all of a sudden start throwing at five different angles. He actually works at that.
To quote John Wooden, failure to prepare is preparing to fail, right? I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said. So, that's certainly what Tom Brady has done and has been such a success. And Patrick Mahomes, he prepares as well. And I have to disagree with John. I think that he'll get back to at least one more Super Bowl in the next 10 years. So, all right, let's bring on our guests today. Our guests today are Jim Rudy and Jeremy Duru. Jim's family has owned the Steelers since 1933. And thanks to their leadership, the Steelers have won 6 Super Bowls, which is tied with the Patriots for the most all time. As we just mentioned, Tom Brady has 7, so he's got one more than a couple of franchises. And Jim also wrote the book, A Different Way to Win, which is about his father, Dan, and the Rooney Rule. And Jeremy Duru, a law professor at American University in Washington, D.C., he's also been a co-author of several books, including one of the NFL's movement toward increased equal opportunity for coaches and front office personnel. And Jim and Jeremy, thank you guys for joining us. It's great to have you here on the program.
Thanks, guys. Good to be here today. Hope all is well. I guess I share some of Dr. Z's, I was rooting for the Chiefs yesterday. Jeremy and I have been similar, unofficially betting on each game. And I kept telling him Mahomes plays like someone that can't be beat. And, I went against Tom Brady, which, you know, when Tom Brady first won the AFC Championship in Pittsburgh in 2001, we had to get a babysitter for my kids. My kids are now out of college. So you can see how many times I've been wrong there.
You know, Jim, I don't usually take the mic from J-Dub this early. He's our point guard and I'm the shooting guard. I just take pot shots, jump shots out from the perimeter. But, you know, to segue from the Chiefs and the Buccaneers to the Steelers, I've been waiting for this for a couple of weeks. And you're talking about your kids and how old they were. So go back in time to the Terry Bradshaw, Lynn Swann, Stallworth, Rocky Blyer, Franco Harris, Lambert, Mean Joe Green days. The first Super Bowl of that era, right? I'm a fourth grader in the middle of West and out in Western Kansas in my first year of Little League football. And I played for the Steelers and we won the city championship. And so did you guys. And, you know, to this day, and I've said this on this podcast a number of times, when I see the Steelers take the field in those uniforms, which thank you for not changing them, I get chills. And, you know, I will, the next thing I'll say about, even though I know most of your roster from then, was, you can tell I was a huge fan, I think that Swan and Stallworth changed the game that the receivers play. In my knowledge, remembering, they're the first guys to start laying out for balls and doing the acrobatics that we now see as commonplace in the game. There's my segue for you. There's your layup.
Well, they were two special players. The interesting thing is, you know, in that story, I talk a lot about the Steelers and the historically black colleges and universities. And we hired a scout named Bill Nunn, who was who just got in the Hall of Fame this past Saturday night. And you know, Bill was going to the HBCUs before, you know, anyone else was. And it really provided this competitive advantage in bringing these folks that no one else was even scouting into the team as a whole. The team that had actually had done a little bit of it before us was the Kansas City Chiefs in the old AFL before we put our dynasty together. They put some really great teams together with Lloyd Wells, who was a scout, one of the first African-American scouts in all of professional football, doing some similar things. But the point of the story is we had one more great receiver, and we actually ended up trading him to Buffalo, a gentleman named Frank Lewis from Grambling. And I had the great opportunity to meet Coach Eddie Robinson from Grambling once, and it was one of those thrill of lifetime before we all had cell phones and cameras. And he couldn't have been more gracious. He said so many wonderful things about my family, my grandfather in particular. But then he said, dumbest move the Steelers ever made was getting rid of Frank Lewis. So we could have had three of the greatest receivers of all time during that period.
It's worked out pretty well, I'd say, for the Steelers franchise. That six Super Bowl titles. And in addition to Bill Nunn, Alan Faneca, a member of the Steelers family, got into the Pro Football Hall of Fame on Saturday night, and a well-deserved enshrinement for him as well, or election. They'll be enshrined later this year. Hey, Jeremy, I wanted to bring you in and get your opinion on the Super Bowl. Not so much what we saw on the field, but maybe what caught your eye and what has caught your eye with regard to who's been on who's on the sidelines for Bruce Arians' staff and how diverse that staff is.
Sure. So, and thanks for bringing us on, guys. Really excited to be here. So the, you know, Bruce Arians is, I've met him a few times. I'm sure Jim knows him much better than I do. But boy, I tell you, you meet Bruce Arians, you know you're getting a genuine article. I mean, he is as genuine gets. And he has for years talked about his commitment to diversity, and you've seen it in all that he did, even before he had a head coaching job. He talks about the way he grew up and how important diversity was to him in his own friendships growing up. And as you referenced J.W., you see it with respect to his staff down there in Tampa Bay, his offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, special teams coordinator. They're all African-American. He has two coaches who are women. And so he's really breaking barriers. And I don't think it's coincidental that when you permit yourself to look broadly for talent, to expand the pool of individuals you are looking to when you're thinking about making your staff up, you're gonna get the best. And he casts a wide net, think he got the best, and you know, 31-9 last night, and he's a Super Bowl champion. So, and you know, those people who are under him in those coordinator positions, he goes at great lengths to point out what great work they do. So he brings them in, he helps train them, and then he exposes them. And I don't think it's going to be a surprise if when we're hopefully talking to you a little short of a year from now, we see Byron Leftwich and Todd Bowles as among the candidates you know, for head coaching positions. Hopefully we'll have landed head coaching positions.
You know, Jeremy, I watched way more of the Super Bowl pregame shows yesterday, in part, and having moved here from the Midwest last winter, we had very few snowstorms. This winter, I'm paying the price. We got 16 inches last week and 8 inches yesterday, so I was trapped. I brag about it, having this beach house. Well, all I saw was snow coming down yesterday, and you weren't going anywhere. So my wife left me alone in a room while I watched all the shows ahead of time, and there were several moments highlighting what you just spoke to. And my favorite line from him was, well, here's these guys were my family. Why wouldn't I hire them? They're the best coaches I knew, and we were family. And, you know, I think when you've been in this business long enough, you if you have the right heart and the right vision, that's just how you see things. It's the folks that you had success with, that you went to battle with, that's who you want around you. And it looks like that's who he has around him, and paid all kinds of dividends.
Yeah, without question. And you know, Andy Reid is the same way. You know, the philosophy you just articulated is Andy Reid's philosophy as well. And it's paid dividends there as well. You know, the one thing that I think is interesting, you know, talking about the diversity of the staffs is, of course, Andy Reid has Eric Bieniemy as offensive coordinator there.
Yeah.
And with many of us, Jim and I have talked together, talked publicly. So many people have talked about the tragedy in Bieniemy not having an opportunity to be a head coach. But, you know, one thing that concerns me is, you know, you often see at the, you know, among the candidate list, those who are of color on those lists, there are only a certain number. You know, they've got a half dozen maybe every year who are being talked about as possible head coaching candidates. And you've had head coaching candidates in the past who have had moments where they really should have gotten jobs. They didn't get them, and they kind of recede, almost as if their window closes. And so I have some concern that we may see that phenomenon with Eric Bieniemy. I hope not.
Yeah,
I think it's not unrealistic, you know, to say it's a possibility.
You know, that I'd never thought of it that way. Obviously, you've studied that more specifically than I have. One of my concerns is the jobs that come open. I mean, the good jobs don't come open. Look at the Steelers. That job's been locked up for quite some time. And there's a number of other good jobs like that. Unfortunately, the jobs that come open are often, quote, bad jobs. And if a guy takes a bad job, then sometimes you aren't given the time to get ahead of the wheel, so to speak. And so there's a whole nother layer of how do you land, not only get a job, but land one of the good jobs when they come open.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's well said. And I think, Jim, the Steelers are known for their stability in head coaches, right? Mike Tomlin's been there for a long time. And before it was Bill Cowher, and before that it was Chuck Knoll. In terms of the way the Steelers organization looks at things and the leadership, you as a team and as a leader, as an organization, you allow your coaches time to build and have a plan and not get fired after 1 or 2 years. Tell us about that.
Well, so I think that's such a good point, and we're talking about the diversity hiring, the Rooney Rule, which is the name of you know, a mechanism that is designed to support, you know, more diverse hiring. And if you look at, you know, how my father did it, and the rule was named after him, you know, he took more time than most folks when they were making hiring decisions. So he didn't. Great respect for the media. I think everyone that talks to Steelers will say, you know, that they do a great job with the media, but he didn't get concerned about what the media's point of view was going to be when he made his hire. You know, he was going to go through the process. So he did a more deliberative, slower process. He interviewed more candidates. So there was greater numbers of folks in that process. It wasn't only taking more time, but starting with a larger pool. And, you know, and so you look at the Mike Tomlin situation. We started with 37 candidates, went down to 12, went down to 4. In that final 4, you had 2 minority candidates. And so it allows you to get, I think, better coaches. And it also allows you to, you know, get an experience with, you know, my father has his biases, or he had his biases like we all do. I mean, that's a human factor. But he created a process that allowed him to get over that and see that Mike Tomlin, like Bill Cowher and Chuck Knoll, you know, would come into our culture. And he wasn't looking for someone to fit in our culture. He was looking for someone to improve our culture. And he felt Mike was going to bring things that would take our culture into the future and be able to grow upon and enhance what had already been there.
Jim, a lot of us in our viewing audience, you know, are familiar with the Rooney Rule. You know, we've heard about it. You know, they read about it, they hear about it in the media. Tell us a story about the Rooney Rule that we may not know. For instance, how did it come about? You know, because I don't think many people understand what led to the Rooney Rule being born and being implemented in the NFL. What's the story behind the Rooney Rule?
So that's a great question. Let me take a crack, and then maybe we'll let Jeremy, if you're good with it, respond some, because he was heavily involved in both some of the things that were going on in those early days, as well as the analysis of it. But I even go back to that Bill Nunn hiring, and so this is 20, 30 years before we're even talking about the Rooney Rule. But my father had put a business plan together when he took the team over from my grandfather, and he said, you know, I'm committed to a more integrated team. We now use the word diverse, but he used the word integration back then. And then, so he goes on for 4 or 5 years, and it's out in the media that Dan Rooney's committed to this more integrated team. Well, we weren't being more successful. This is in the 1960s. And Bill Nunn, who actually wrote for one of the largest African-American newspapers in the country, sat down with my father and criticized him. He said, you say this, but you're not doing it. And my father was willing to hear that criticism in a way that he didn't get defensive, he didn't run from it. You know, he really embraced that Bill had ideas that were beyond his own. And so my father was willing to, have a clear and definitive plan, then listen to criticism, listen to people who had a different point of view, and then ultimately bring that point of view in. As I said, we drafted more players from the HBCUs than any other team, put it into action. So I think all three of those steps are things that if someone does conduct the Rooney Rule well, those should be there, that you're going to get points of view that are different than yours, that you have a clear and definitive plan, but then you're going to commit to taking action. So I think those are three principles that I always talk about when people ask, well, why was your father the sort of the guy that put the Rooney Rule together? I said, historically, he had done these things, and he really, I think, carried those three principles well with what he was trying to do there. Jeremy, I don't know if you want to sort of jump in with some of the other historical context, because I think the outside, what was going on outside of my father was really important as well.
Sure, Jim. Yeah, so it was fascinating. You know, Jim described what's going on inside the club, but what's going on inside the club wasn't going on inside all other clubs. You know, the Steelers were, Dan Rooney was ahead in bringing in Bill Nunn. They were ahead in so many different ways. And other clubs, and as a consequence, league kind of lagged behind where the Steelers were pushing. And you could see the consequences of that when you looked at diversity among coaches around the league. So you get into this century, early in the century, in 2001, after 2001 season, Tony Dungy and Dennis Green, who was with the Vikings at the time, Tony Dungy with the Bucks, are both terminated within 2 weeks of each other. And that leaves us with one African-American head coach out of 32 teams. And it just was too much for a lot of people to take in the Black community in the NFL, and also in the legal community, the civil rights community. And a couple of lawyers saw what was going on, saw these numbers, felt like this was very similar to what they saw in their employment discrimination, plaintiff side legal practices, and went out and commissioned a study to figure out what was happening with Black coaches in the NFL when they did get head coaching jobs. And they studied 15 years going back from 2001. So going back to 1986, they got a labor economist, analyzed all the head coaches during that time by wins and losses, and found that the head coaches of color won 2.7 more games on average per season in their first season in the job than white head coaches. And in the year they were terminated, almost 1.5 more games on average than white coaches. So what the numbers showed was that we've got a last hired, first hired, even though you're doing a better job on the numbers phenomenon. And the conclusion was not that somehow Black coaches are inherently better at coaching. The conclusion was that Black coaches had been essentially held in apprentice roles as assistants for so long that when they finally did get the opportunity to be head coaches, they were just, as logic would suggest, and just a little bit better. And so these lawyers took this report to the NFL with a bit of, there were some litigation threats. I mean, there was not a kumbaya moment. And to the credit of those at the NFL, Jeff Pasch, Paul Tagliabue, they looked at the report. Jeff Pasch, the general counsel then and now, the lead. Tagliabue was the commissioner. Then they looked at the report and said, this report's got something to it. And we know we've got our problems internally. Dan Rooney and others have been telling us this. We have to sit down and talk with these folks about how to move forward. And they sat down, they talked over the course of a couple of months. Paul Tagliabue set up a committee, the Workplace Diversity Committee of owners, to really, really attack the question, and appointed Dan Rooney as chair of that committee. And when the lawyers, who had by this time kind of joined up with some former NFL players and NFL executives, when they learned about this, they turned to those folks who were also concerned about this issue, guys like Warren Moon, Kellen Winslow Sr., and a gentleman named John Wooten, who played with the Browns back in the 60s with Jim Brown and went on to be a great front office executive for a few different clubs. They said, hey, listen, we hear that Dan Rooney's been appointed as chair of this committee. And that was all Wooten needed to hear. And he said, oh my gosh, we've won. And he said that because he knew the sort of work that Dan Rooney had been doing for decades in the league. And so with the rule in place and with Dan Rooney kind of spearheading its effectuation, the folks on the I guess outside agitator side, you could say, felt like there was going to be some real progress.
Jim, are you happy with the progress of where we're at now with regard to the Rooney Rule? Is I don't want to put words in your mouth. I'm not even sure happy is the right word, but you tell me, how do you feel about where we are in terms of the progress that your father started and where we are right now?
Well, I mean, I think on the first level, you know, you look at what happened for the first 15 years while my father was alive. He actually ends up working with John Wooten. Every time there's a job opening, the two of them are on the phone, not pushing someone to hire someone, you know, because of their color, but making sure that they had all the information, that they were familiar with these candidates, that they could give examples of what they had done well, who they had trained under, you know, had they worked for Bill Belichick or Andy Reid, et cetera, you know, what were their careers like? So there was solid information, and my father and John Rooten really advocated for that. And you saw a really strong increase. You saw a 300% increase in terms of minority coaches hired in the first 10 years. You saw similar number with general managers. You see where we are with on-field game officials. And then you go beyond football and you have, you know, the Rooney Rule is used in investment banking. It's used in the tech sector. It's used in Congress. So you had an increase in terms of the numbers, which is important. And then you had this significant change in the conversation in corporate America. So from that standpoint, you know, those are things that I see as positives. But you can't look at the last several years in the NFL and really look at industry in general. And what happened was, in so many ways, you know, opportunities grew because there was this spark was ignited in many ways at top type levels, whether it was a CEO or just below a CEO. But you didn't, or what didn't happen was the pipeline wasn't being filled at you know, the assistant level on the offensive side of the ball in particular, which is the pathway to head coach. So you get, you know, another 10 years out from the Rooney Rule, and you know, you've been backsliding. And there's a whole host of reasons we can get into discussing that, but it's certainly frustrating to see the backsliding and so I think that's a conversation we all need to be having. If we think this is something good, and look, I think any reasonable person would say, you know, there's more than the Rooney Rule to solve these problems. But if we think this is one tool that's good, we have to look at the results. And I don't think you can look at the recent results and be happy about it.
Yeah, the numbers, as Jim points out, you know, approximately 70% of the NFL players are minorities, but you only have five minority head coaches right now. Jim mentioned that the Rooney Rule is, you know, certainly a tool that can be used to help further diversity and inclusion and opening up more opportunities for minorities. What are some other tools, do you think? I mean, you know, it seems as Jim said, we kind of where the stock has slid a little bit here. What is it going to take specifically to move this forward, especially in the NFL?
Sure, Jay Dub. I mean, a few things. I think, one thing is something that Jim mentioned when he was talking about his father's searches for head coach, and particularly about the Tomlin search. Which is time. And it might not sound like that's really that important, but you know, a lot of pretty much all sociological studies that have studied this draw the same conclusion, which is when you are forced to make a quick decision, turn something around quickly, you tend to fall back to what's comfortable, to what you're familiar with, to what those around you are familiar with. You tend not to think broadly about what you're going to do with that decision. And I would posit that in a league where the great majority of the real power brokers and clubs are white, you know, we have, I guess, 32 clubs, and I think 30 of the presidents are white. The ownership structures in terms of general partner are all white across the league. I think it's more likely that you'll fall back on something familiar, perhaps a white candidate, if you are having to make a quick decision. And so one thing to do is to slow down the process. And the Rooney Rule seeks to do this, it tries to do this, but if clubs aren't serious about it, they'll just go as quickly as they can to get a hire mate, but to slow down the process. I've been arguing for years that perhaps there should be a moratorium on head coach hiring between the last day of the regular season, so there wouldn't be any Black Monday where everybody's fired. Or they could be fired, but there wouldn't be hires quickly following them. A moratorium from then until after the Super Bowl, giving everybody to take time and decompress and really take the time that's required to be intentional and deliberate about a broad search, about the value of diversity, and ultimately to make a hire. And at the end of the day, I think if you slow things down in that way, you are more likely to end up with a candidate of color because you've opened yourself up to that possibility. And I think the other thing I'd say is just that I think too many club owners, from my perspective, this is just me, are focused on who they want to hire as opposed to who would be best for the job. And you know, those two different things potentially, and often it's the case they're two different things. And so just slowing down, really thinking about who would be best for the job, essentially engaging in some sort of real cultural, going back to what Jim said again, cultural introspection, like his father did in those early days with Bill Nunn, thinking about what are we doing? How can we do things better? I think if you have that sort of mind frame together with the Rooney Rule, I think you're gonna see some substantial progress.
You know, I think you really hit on something there, not having ever been in the NFL, but of hired at the college level for a number of years now, you do feel pressure to hurry up and hire. You know, if you can keep the media and other stakeholders at bay, you know, you'd be amazed. It's folks are constantly trying, you've lived it, you know, trying to get in who you interviewing, who you this, who and that. And they mean well, but quite frankly, sometimes they get in the way of the process and causes people to go way faster than they'd like to do. Another thing, just as you said that, Jeremy, I'm thinking back to my own experiences, you fall back on your own networks. Mm-hmm. And I think there's been talk, certainly within the NFL and otherwise, there's a whole other layer below this of how do you help people of all backgrounds develop those networks? Because that's sometimes by the time the search comes, it's too late. When someone's in dire straits and needs help and needs that assistant coach or that head coach and your job's in peril, you know, you may want to do this or aspire to do that, but you fall back to who you know and who gives you comfort and who can save you, so to speak.
Yeah. I think that's a really smart take, Dr. Z. I think that's exactly right. I think that happens. And I think the unfortunate piece is, I think often, you know, the consequence is detrimental to the decision maker because they've not opened themselves up to other folks. And there's nothing malevolent about it. There's nothing There's not malfeasance in it. You know, it's just kind of a natural thing to do. And sometimes we have to, as Bill Nunn ended up doing with, you know, with Spike Dennery, we have to think about what we do naturally and recognize there are other perspectives and accept those, and perhaps move forward in a better and stronger way. Not easy, but I think we all benefit from doing it.
I think one other piece I would just, I mean, there's, Jeremy said so many things so well, there's probably a lot I could comment on. But the one I'll jump in on is that, you know, he used the term window closing on Eric Bieniemy, some of these other folks. And I think that's exactly right. I think you get a little bit penalized by going to the Super Bowl because, you know, the Steelers haven't played a game in a month and we played in the first round of the playoffs. So Todd Bowles and Byron Leftwich and Eric Bieniemy, yeah, they could do some interviewing, but they aren't totally focused on the interview because, you know, they're focusing like everyone else. Look, you know, coach, you know, everyone wants to win. So it can be the greatest opportunity of your life. But if you're on the track of trying to win a championship, you're just not there. You're into trying to win. And so it's, you're getting people when they're per se, not necessarily at their best. And then you have to wait longer. And if I'm an owner under the current situation, other than my dad, who, you know, was a bit of an outlier, you know, good and bad, you know, he didn't really care what people thought of him. And, you know, but, you know, and he didn't have, you know, we'd been successful for so long, especially in Mike's case, he didn't have to worry about selling tickets next year. But if those are concerns of yours, you start saying, okay, I want a good story to come out of this. This was a bad story this season, this and that. So I really think Jeremy's point, even though it would present some real mechanical challenges, I think we should think about that so that we, you know, you would be starting the hiring process today or tomorrow. And guys like Todd Bowles and Bieniemy and those guys are getting a chance. I'll add one last point. I know I've been talking a lot here, but when you look at Eric Bieniemy last year, last Super Bowl and really the whole playoff, and then Todd Bowles this year, and look, you know, I'm never going to dismiss Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady, but both of those folks really were the key components to the last two Super Bowl championships. Last year, Eric, it was using Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and the tight end as decoys and having a running game that just won the fourth quarter. Yesterday, look, they certainly had tackles out and everything else, but you saw that defense. I mean, they shut Patrick Mahomes down. It was the least points he's ever scored as a professional. And, you know, that again, with all due respect to Tom Brady was on the bench when all that happened. So, you know, that is the defensive coordinator. And now these folks won't get opportunities. And again, it goes to the timing conversation.
Jim, don't apologize for talking. You're on here. We want you to talk. The people don't want to hear from J-Dub and me. You know, if they wanted that, we'd just sit on here and blow. But
my wife's heard me talk enough, so she's been cautioning me, you know. Since
our wives all do that. Trust me. I'm you fired several synapses here, which I appreciate. The one is, I'm thinking at the college level, sitting head coaches are getting, it used to be you got fired during the season, but they're getting fired earlier and earlier so that searches can begin earlier and earlier because they want to hire faster and faster. Like you said, if there could be some kind of moratorium, nobody hires until a certain date. At the NFL level or college level, there would be time for this, but we're almost working against ourselves. You know, also made me look in the mirror and realize I know some individuals. Years ago, a sitting head coach at an FBS school who lost out on a Power 5 job because he was in contention for one of the New Year's Day bowl games. And they weren't willing to wait. And it cost him. He was the guy. But he wasn't going to leave until after that bowl game. And they wanted to get recruiting going. And then I look in the mirror and I think of some assistant coaches I interviewed on the cusp of those kind of bowl games. And they weren't as prepared. And folks on the committee didn't give them that I'm not sure I gave him that benefit of the doubt. You know, they walked off a practice field to interview with us, and the other guy had his notebook in front of him for the last week, you know.
Yep. No, I think that's, I mean, you got it. That's, you know, you want the most competitive person, but then they get kind of penalized for being the competitive person, yeah. Which I think is such an interesting phenomenon. And the other is, look, certainly one perspective my father had is, and my father hated to lose, you know, and we've won a lot. So I think I can say this with true credence. He would never have worried about one off season. And I'm not saying he wanted to throw away an off season, but he understood he was hiring someone, you know, when he hired Chuck Knoll, I mean, that was most of his life, you know, that was his whole sort of mid adulthood that Chuck Knoll was his partner, his head coach. And so if it was going to take a guy a little bit longer to get the off-season program going, that didn't concern him. And I think in so many ways, folks get wrapped up in, well, I have to go to the Senior Bowl. You do have to do that. But I think there are ways, you know, you can gather all the information. You can do these things well enough that if folks were willing to have a longer term perspective, they might wait longer and take more time in their decision making and still be effective. But it would take a mind shift around, you know, yeah, there might be a few suboptimal things I have to do this off season, but in the long run, I'm making my organization better.
Now, I think that's a fantastic point, Jim. You know, we tend, I think all of us tend to kind of get bogged down in logistics and what would be involved in substantial logistical change. I would say that I think we have learned in so many different respects from this past year, so much about how, you know, other ways in which things can operate. Let's just look at the pandemic for a moment. I mean, we do things now logistically in our lives that we never would have thought that we would have done. We thought it'd be impossible to get to that place to do those things, but we now do them and we find that it's doable. And so to Jim's point, yes, there would be, you know, you worry about the Senior Bowl and getting, you know, getting moving toward the draft and those sorts of things. But if we have a real dedicated, you know, focus on, you know, we have to make this change and here are the sorts of things we're going to do to ease the logistical burdens, you know, nobody can tell me it wouldn't be undoable to create some sort of a head coach hiring moratorium.
Jim, we've talked a lot about your dad and rightly so, but I want to spend a moment or two here talking about your mom. And first of all, Dr. Z and I express our condolences. Your mom, Patricia, passed away a little more than a week ago. What do you want people to know about her?
Well, thank you so much for saying that. And it's been, you know, talking about strange times. You know, I'm certainly not patting my mother or my family on the back, but we had a funeral with less than 30 people. And we were in this massive church. You know, I just can't imagine that it wouldn't be filled, you know, with standing room only if we were in a different time. So even there, the way we grieve is different. You know, we all had masks on, you know, it's just, we're in such a different moment. So I really appreciate that. I guess what has been good about this moment is social media. I've seen so many wonderful comments about my mother, and my mother really, like my father, and she pushed my father, but you know, really looked at the world and looked at like the conversations we're having. You can have challenging conversations and be civil, and she really fought for that. She was a teacher. She had 9 children, didn't go to college, went to college when my younger sister, my baby sister, went to first grade, got her degree, and then got her master's and became a teacher, and then ultimately taught in a community college setting here in Western Pennsylvania. So she was dedicated to education, this idea of civility, and then my father's work in Ireland. She was always with him and probably in Ireland more times than he was. It really was a commitment to peace. So especially, she was my mother. I love her and we'll miss her, but she really tried to, you know, use her situation of influence and, you know, try to make the world a more peaceful and more civil place. So thank you so much for remembering her.
Jim, you mentioned your father. You know, he's done so many great things. You know, very few members of our audience probably realize, as you mentioned, he was ambassador to Ireland under President Obama. So your mom had a chance to see things firsthand. You had a chance to see him in action firsthand as ambassador. Can you think of a story, or can you tell us a story about his time as ambassador to Ireland that maybe sums up your dad and his time in that position?
Well, there's a lot of stories he brought together. So in Ireland, like so many places in Europe, you've had a large Muslim population growth, emigration to Ireland. So he held these council lunches with Catholic, Protestant, which there's traditionally been battles in Ireland with those communities, Muslim and Jewish leaders. Every once a month, he would have these luncheons with clerics and leaders from those communities, and he really got you know a lot of credit for you know making sure that there was dialogue, there was communication. So that's one. The last story I'll tell, and I hope everyone appreciates this, but Dr. Z, being a football guy, you might really like this. So every 4th of July on every embassy in the United States, you have a baseball game. My father said, "Wow, we're having a football game." So he put together this flag football game, and he brought in jumbotrons and all, not at taxpayer expense. We had sponsors, all these things, and put this game together. And the Marines stationed at the embassy would play in it. My son played in it, some other folks, but mainly for the Marines. And in the center of the field where you might see a Steelers symbol or a Chargers symbol, he had the seal of the United States of America. And I got to be there the first time the Marines got to come on the field and see that seal. And, you know, there were tears in their eyes. And, you know, that was really a special moment. So it was a lot of fun while he was ambassador.
That's combining some pretty neat stuff right there. You know, my wife's last name is McInerney. I think she's going to enjoy this podcast more than some of the others and I know there's a direct flight from Hartford to Dublin. And as soon as this pandemic lifts, I think that's her first goal, is to be on that flight, whether I'm on it or not.
I've never been I've done the Boston many, many times. I didn't know there was one from Hartford. Maybe I'll do that. It's probably, probably an easier connection than not have to deal with Logan.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a nice little airport. You can get in and out pretty quick.
Yeah.
Well, final thoughts, gentlemen. I know we're running short on time here. You guys have been very gracious with your time. We appreciate it. Final thoughts. Jeremy, we'll start with you, and Jim will wrap up with you. Anything, Jeremy, that you want to express to our viewing and listening audience today?
No, I think, you know, it's been a great, you know, great fun to be on the show. And I think that the one thing I'll say, and it's not just about this issue of diversity in football coaching, but I think, you know, all of us should spend some time being introspective and questioning our assumptions about things and thinking about whether there are better ways to do things. I think when all of us take time to do those things, I think we become better people, and that works to the benefit of society in general.
Jeremy, that was wonderful. I will take that and say how I saw my parents do that, since we talked a little bit about them. And you know, they did two things in Ireland, in the troubles in Ireland, and I think they brought it to the Rooney Rule and the Steelers. And one was they were always willing to step into the mess, into difficult conversations, you know, and I think we have to, there's the introspective side, and then we have to take some action. And sometimes it's being uncomfortable. So they're willing to be uncomfortable, but they also seem to be able to do it pretty well while also being kind. They didn't agree with everyone's point of view, and they were with points of view that were different, but there was a way that they could do that. I saw them do it without, you know, always having that kindness, that generosity of spirit in the conversation.
I think that's a perfect way to end it. Dr. Z, any final thoughts for Jeremy and Jim before we let them go?
You know, I'm looking at the books behind them, and you know, offline, I'm going to ask for some book recommendations. But you don't have to now, unless there's one on the forefront of your mind. I keep these lists, and I can't help but ask if there's a book right now that we all ought to be reading.
Well, Jeremy and I are the two greatest book salesmen in the world, I've found, because we started this talk and we combined his book about the Rooney Rule. He helped me with my book. We said, you know, if you read them together, you get an understanding of what happened internally with the owners and Dan Rooney and those folks, and then externally with Cyrus Miri and the folks that Jeremy mentioned. So if you read our two books together, you get the deepest understanding you can about the Rooney Rule.
There you go. That's the audience needs to listen to that. All right. I'm gonna ask this our front office to just order them immediately. So here we go.
Thank you.
You can see Jim's book right over his left shoulder there, the one he wrote about his father. It's right there.
That's great. I had the books like every other book, yeah. And Joe Berardi, who helps me with marketing and has actually been helping Jeremy and I with some of these conversations, she said, "What in the world are you doing? Get that book turned so everyone can see it." So it was the smart marketing person that told me I had to do that.
Absolutely. Yep.
Well, Jim and Jeremy, thank you guys very much for being here on the Dr. Z and J-Dub podcast. Once we get beyond COVID and it's safe to do so, the door is always open at the University of New Haven. We'd love to have you guys on campus at some point in time if you're coming through this neck of the woods.
Thanks, guys. Would love to.
Love to come up there.
Jim Rooney, Jeremy Duru, thanks for joining us. And we'll talk to you guys sometime down the road. Appreciate you guys being with us today. That is Jim and that is Jeremy. And we'll do a quick reset here. You know, this is the Dr. Z and J-Dub podcast. We thank our presenting sponsor, the Pink Clover Foundation. Thanks for all they do for us. Thanks for all they do in the battle against breast cancer. For more information, go to pinkcloverfoundation.org. Dr. Z, a lot of great information there between what Jim said and what Jeremy said. I know you spent a lot of time thinking, listening to them. You know, I could see the wheels turning in your head. Yeah. There's a lot to unpack. And I think there's a lot from what both men said that we can apply to what we're doing here at UNH in our personal lives. And maybe for any of our viewers or listeners who might be able to apply it in a professional setting in the industry they work in.
No, that was a real pleasure to listen to both of them. And there's times in life when you talk less and listen more. A mentor of mine once said, God gave you two eyes and one mouth, use them in that. You know, or two ears and one mouth, use them in that way. And today was one of those. I wanted to hear what they had to say. And as Jeremy had said early on, he talked about introspection. And from the moment they started speaking, it kind of put me in that space. And, you know, I don't like to take notes when I were on this show, but I did take a few. And this will be something that I'll be chewing on this for a while myself, try to get them back here with our student athletes and staff in some way over time. And, you know, I certainly read the books and there's a lot to be thought about and processed, and a lot of people's lives and careers are in the balance here. And in all fairness, it deserves, you know, a lot of good people out there deserve the time, the effort, and the energy when it comes to hiring practices. And you know, this was an important discussion, and I appreciate the time they gave us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, it's important to give people opportunities who may not get opportunities or who have been denied opportunities in the past. If our producer, Broccoli Rob Thompson, is still in the back, I'd like to bring him out and get his thoughts as well. You know, Rob, you know, he's in this leadership council with us here. And, you know, your thoughts, Rob, with regard to what Jim and Jeremy said, what stood out to you?
Well, I think just to tee up, I mean, having the opportunity to spend a good part of my career at the National Football League in the league office and then for the Walt Disney Company, there's no two more diverse organizations. But, you know, diversity and inclusion, I've said this before, they're just not two words. It's a culture that an organization has. And they even so they don't have to check a box. It's just part of what they're looking for, right? The best ideas, the best talent, period. There's a lot of good ideas, a lot of good talented people out there. So, you know, when you look at organizations from the top down, I'm lucky enough that I kind of came through and learned that way and went with our hiring practices. There was never it was always just bring us the best talented people that best fit the job. You know, but in sports, and Dr. Z spoke about it, and so did Jeremy and Jim, were the thing about the window of opportunity, sometimes you miss out on, you know, and when you're in the entrepreneur, you know, when you're in the business world, you know, you have time, you have a runway, right? A lot of times you can wait a quarter or two quarters until you find the right person. You know, I thought it was very interesting, the point that Dr. Z brought up about you, that window and that pressure for media to hire, hire, hire from alums. And that could really hurt that full process of finding the right person. And it was interesting that Jeremy said the same thing of, can we change that rule to hold off after the Super Bowl to give everybody a shot? Can they do the same thing in college, hold off after the bowl games, the national championship, to give everybody a chance to get settled and put. So I thought that's the one thing I took away. I was like, man, those are great ideas, you know? So it definitely allows it. But anyways, yeah, that was really interesting. Great job, you two.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Rob. Appreciate it. No, it was a great show. We're very grateful to Jim and to Jeremy for their time. And we do hope to see them at some point in person, maybe a year from now. And as they said, maybe a year from now, we're talking about Eric Bieniemy as a head coach and Byron Leftwich as a head coach and Todd Bowles, who's been a head coach. Maybe he gets to be a head coach again. Final thoughts, Z, before we sign off for the day.
Selfishly, I'd like to keep Bieniemy for one more year with the Chiefs, but and Bowles, you know, the defensive scheme, you know, that I to go back to X's and O's, I was at a breakfast on Saturday repeating a show I had seen earlier in the week about how, you know, the defensive back, his name's slipping me, that was covered the Chiefs, Tyreek Hill in 12. You know, was saying, hey, we got a whole new game plan, we're going to be okay. And the pundits were making fun of him, saying, well, what are they going to do? You know, Mahomes is just going to keep hitting Kelsey in zone coverage until they have to go to man coverage. They're going to burn him with Hill. And I kind of took it hook, line, and sinker. And at the end of the day, you know, if you paid attention to what the Bucs did, they played more to, you know, halves coverage, something like 80% of the game. That's unheard of. And had two men low and high over both Hill and Kelsey and forced them into a whole different game. So I'm sorry to go there, but it's something that Jim spoke to that I had to go back to, that even more props to coach and his defensive scheme with the Bucs. And you didn't expect that to be my concluding comments, but it was on my brain. I had to download it to somebody, and it's you, J-Dub. So
thank you.
Again, really enjoyed this. It was deep. They were insightful. And yeah, I'll be thinking about it for a few more days. I can tell you that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We all will. We all should be. We have these conversations. That's the only way to move forward. We thank Jim Rooney. We thank Jeremy Duru for joining us here on the Dr. Z and J-Dub podcast. For our executive producer, John Mays, and for our producer, Broccoli Rob Thompson. For Dr. Z, I'm J-Dub. We'll see you next time.